I'm Ronnie Allen, and today I am pleased to be talking to a man who is soon going to be celebrating his 50th year in the music business, a man whose hit records are among the most memorable and distinctive of the rock era. And I'm talking about Mr. Gary U.S. Bonds, and Gary is on the phone right now. How you doing, Gary?
I'm doing okay, Ronnie. How you doing? And it's good to be called Mr. It took 50 years to get that, huh?
Okay. Yeah. Well, it took a while to even get the Gary because you didn't even start out as Gary. We'll get to that story in a few moments. Actually, your real name is Gary Anderson.
Gary Anderson is my real name. My mother would never name me U.S. Bond.
We just mentioned your 50th year, and before we actually go through your history and take some walks down memory lane, you have a special celebration party coming up. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, June, which is actually my birthday, is June 6th. We're going to have it held at B.B. King's right here in Manhattan, downtown 42nd Street. It's going to be a wonderful occasion. We're also celebrating the release of the new album and my birthday and the 50th year in the business. Chuck Jackson's coming. My dear friend, Benny King, and also my lovely lady friend, Miss Darlene Love, and I know that Springsteen and Bon Jovi are going to be on the road at the time, but they promised me they're going to take a couple of minutes to make a video for me to play for the audience there, and maybe Neil Sedaka. Looks like he may come also, so it's going to be a grand evening.
Gary, let's go back to the very beginning. You were actually born in Florida, is that correct?
In Jacksonville, Florida, yeah.
And you then moved to Norfolk, Virginia?
Yep.
When did you move to Norfolk?
Very early. Well, I guess Mom got me there when I was about 3-4 years old.
You initially started singing, I believe, in church. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, we did a few things in church, but I wasn't as religious as people thought I was. I was just going there to sing songs because they paid $5 when you came there and you sang.
You weren't a religious guy, huh?
Yeah, the Lord was good to me.
I'm reading here that there was a group called the Terps.
Yeah, that was just a group that I used to have. We kind of sang on the corner, you know, just to entertain ourselves and a few of the young ladies that lived in the neighborhood, to impress them. But that was it. I mean, we actually didn't go out and do any shows that paid anything, and a couple of school contests.
Like talent contests in school?
Talent contests, yeah. You know, people like the Sheiks and also Norman Johnson, General Johnson.
Well, General Johnson went on to the chairman of the board.
He was with the Humdingers back then. Yeah. He used to battle it out on stage a lot.
What was his other group? The Showmen. They did
the
that
Showmen,
record.
Right.
It Will Stand. I remember him.
Yeah.
What's the earliest type of music that you were singing?
We were doing basically, the Drifters, the Clovers, the Coasters, the Flamingos. You know, the basic groups, basic doo-wop stuff, and we haven't bothered with that.
Did you, when you were a youngster, have any dreams of becoming a record star?
I think the first time I thought about being in this business was my mom took me to the Booker T Theater in Norfolk, which I think is called the Attics also. Bull Moose Jackson was one of the acts, and Ivory Joe Hunter was the other act. And I was so impressed that, the way they dressed, the lighting was like, everything was flashy. And the girls were yelling and screaming, for these guys. And I went, that's what I want to be. I want to be one of those guys. I had to strive to do that from then on in.
Well, you and probably a few million other people had the same dream.
Of course. It was a dream, but it came true.
In your case, it came true when you met up with a certain record producer who had just started a small label. And who was that guy?
Frank Guida was his name.
G-U-I-D-A, Frank Guida.
He's no longer with us, but he owned the record store there in Norfolk, Virginia, called Frankie's Got It. And on his way to his work, he used to pass by our corner where we'd be out there singing, sometimes late at night or in the afternoon when he was going home for lunch or something. And he'd stop and listen to us. And he told us, one day, he said, I'm going to open up a recording studio, and I really would like for you guys to come in and do a couple of songs with me. Of course, we agreed. But unfortunately, about the time he got it together, which is 2 or 3 years later, most of the guys had either gone off to the service or gotten out of town, so I was the only one left, so he picked me.
So this must have been sometime in the 50s that you met Frank Guida.
Oh, yeah. It was the late 50s.
You were the only one left standing, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, at that time, did he actually have a record company, or was it just a studio?
He had created the record company because he had already recorded one other act, and that was Tommy Fassenda.
Tommy Fassenda did a song called High School USA, and it originally came out on Frank's label, and we should now tell people what the label was called.
LeGrand Records, L-E-G-R-A-N-D. Exactly.
Okay. And LeGrand Records, L-E-G-R-A-N-D.
We wound up calling him Frank Greedy, but that has nothing.
All right, do we take that out of the tape, or do we leave it in here? Eventually, Atlantic Records picked High School USA up. Do you remember why High School USA was such an unusual recording?
Well, it mentioned every school in your area.
That's exactly the point I wanted to make. In order to mention schools in my area and other people's areas, he had to record something like 30 different versions of the song.
It was not cost-effective at all.
Could you imagine, for example, recording New Orleans 30 different times for 30 different areas of the country?
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, it made a big splash, but...
Well, the record made a big splash, but it was a novelty.
It was a novelty.
And he probably...
He studio every 20 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, next session, 20 minutes. Let's take a break. Next session, 20 minutes. And then when he has to perform the song, he must have index cards in front of him. So he's reading that. He couldn't have possibly memorized all the versions of the song.
Impossible.
He became a fireman, by the way. I think he wanted to use the term firefighter.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That's what he did. All right, we're going to talk now about U.S. Bonds. I'm not talking now about Gary U.S. Bonds. I'm talking about U.S. Bonds, as in buy U.S. Bonds. And that's the reason why you had your original name. Now, this was Frank Guida's... I'm going to start saying Frank Greedy. This was Frank Guida's idea, a little gimmick, because back then it was buy U.S. bonds. There was these posters, it was on the radio, the TV, buy U.S. bonds.
Yeah.
So I guess he felt that if he had a singer named U.S. Bonds, whenever the expression buy U.S. bonds came out, whether on a poster or in the broadcast media, it would be advertising you.
Yeah.
So it worked. Was New Orleans your very first recording?
Yes, it was.
Did you write the song, or Frank, or somebody else?
No, actually it was written by Joe Royster, which was a friend of Frank's, but Frank put his name on it anyway, so... Frank put his name on everything, so...
He's probably not the only one, Gary, but...
No, probably not, but he was the only one that I knew.
The first time you heard the song, was it on a demo?
No, he just played it for me. He was a guitarist, and he just played it for me on his guitars, and it was a country song. He was a country guy.
This started out as a country song?
Well, that's what he wrote country.
Oh, but now New Orleans does not sound like a country song at all.
Not after I got through with it.
Okay, but when you started it...
It was a country song.
Now, was the, I say, hey, you know, that part of it...
That was not in there, no.
So how did that get put in?
I just started, I always liked the Heidi Heidi Ho guy, you know, Cap Calloway. I always thought he was, like, unique.
So actually, the most distinctive part of New Orleans, which is really the beginning part, and of course it gets repeated throughout the song, was inspired by Cap Calloway.
Exactly.
Now, the billing on the record said, buy U.S. bonds.
B-Y.
So DJs would actually say, buy U.S. bonds. We're going to listen to it right now. This is New Orleans, buy U.S. bonds.
I said, down in New Orleans, I said, hey.
a great sound that is. That's New Orleans. It's an unusual sound, too. In fact, it's not, forgive me for this, but it doesn't sound like a polished record. The sound on your records was not your typical polished recordings. They sounded very different. Is unpolished the word? You know what I'm saying? It had a unique sound.
It's not the word, but that's the safest word we can use on radio.
Oh, okay. And that is not a criticism. In fact, it's a compliment.
It worked out good, but for the first year from 59 to some parts of 60, some radio stations wouldn't play it because of the sound. They said, this is too bad. This is not the standard. This is not good. It doesn't fit our bill. The song is nothing. And then we took it to Dick Clark up in Philadelphia, sat down and had a meeting with him. And he says, I like the song. Let me play it on American Bandstand. And he played it twice in one day. I think it's the only song that was ever played twice in one day. And from then on in, it became a hit, and every DJ after that went, oh, man, what a great sound you got there.
So Dick Clark was the one that really broke the record then.
He put his stamp on it, and that was it.
Did Frank do anything technically to make the sound exactly the way it was?
We had a makeshift studio, and just took a room and opened it up and put those eight cartons all around it, soundproofing. It had a two-track recorder and limited amount of microphones, and we just got in there and kind of jammed.
And it worked.
And none of us, and Joe Rust, who was the engineer, he knew nothing about engineering, but he was the one that knew how to turn it on and turn it off, so I guess he became appointed to do that. And we just kind of went in and had fun.
There are a lot of singers on the record. They're not you multi-track. There's other singers on there, right?
Well, it's me multi-track on the lead. The background is just a bunch of my drunk friends.
Your drunk friends. Am I supposed to say they sound it? I don't know.
Of course they do.
Yeah. What about the musicians? Were the musicians the people that eventually were in the Church Street Five?
Yeah, but Daddy G was the sax player. And the rest of the guys were all jazz guys. They knew nothing about rock and roll, but they were there to get paid. Rock and roll was kind of new then, too. So we were all just getting busy learning. Having a bunch of fun.
Well, if you're going to have a learning experience, you might as well have one that ends up as a top 10 record. And New Orleans was a smash. It got to number 6 in the country in the year 1960. And I'm Ronnie Allen talking to the man who made it. We're talking about, of course, New Orleans by U.S. Bonds. He's not Gary yet, at least not professionally.
Not yet.
Not quite yet. New Orleans has been recorded by a lot of different people, and we're going to give you just a little sample of a couple of those recordings. Eddie Hodges is one of the people that did a recording of New Orleans. You know Eddie Hodges? I've got to knock on your door. Let's hear a little bit of Eddie's version of New Orleans.
I did a hit.
That was a little bit of Eddie Hodges. And now I dug up this. You did a version of New Orleans with somebody named Neil Sedaka. Oh, Sedaka.
Yes, Neil Sedaka.
When did you do this?
1984.
Was this for one of his albums?
Yeah, he put it on the album. I think it was on an MCA album.
This is Neil Sedaka, guest appearance by... By then you were Gary U.S. Bonds, and this is New Orleans. Great sound. Now, you recorded a song called Not Me, and this is one you wrote, is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it did not become one of your biggest charted records, but let's listen to a little bit of Not Me right now. This is by U.S. Bonds.
Right.
Well, I'm down in California.
was a little bit of your version of Not Me, but there was this group called the Orlons who got a hold of it. I understand that by the time it started to rise on the chart, you didn't even know about it until it was starting to rise, that they even did it.
Right, exactly. Right, they did it, I can't remember, it was a year or two later
after
I recorded it.
So you had done it actually in 1960, and they did theirs in 1962.
Yeah,
Not Me. That's what Gary said. That's Not Me. That's the Orlons.
Great.
What did you think of their recording of it? I liked it.
I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I thought they did a good job on it, you know.
And you liked it even better when you went to the bank every week.
I love that.
Yeah. Now we're going to get to the recording that changed your life. You were still U.S. Bonds, and you recorded a song called Quarter to Three. And at the time the recording came out, Frank Guido wasn't sure whether this was going to be the A side or not. In fact, he was pretty high on a song called Having So Much Fun. And before there was Quarter to Three, there was a recording called A Night with Daddy G.
That was with Gene Barge, Daddy G.
How many people were in the Church Street Five?
Five.
Yeah. I guess ask a silly question, you see. The next question is, who is buried in Grant's tomb? There were five.
Okay. Five, yeah.
Including Daddy G, so he was one of the five.
Exactly.
They put out the record. How did it become Quarter to Three?
It wasn't really selling. A Night with Daddy G wasn't really doing that good. It wasn't moving at all as an instrumental. And we all felt we had something there. We all, you know, kind of felt it was a good groove to work with. It was a fun song to do. It needed lyrics, so I wrote some lyrics for it. Took them out of minutes, basically. And as you can see, they're not those profound lyrics you would find from Johnny Mathis. But
what inspired you? Did the clock on the wall say 2:45 and you said, I'm going to write Quarter to Three?
Well, I think that was the only thing I could get to rhyme with Daddy G.
Thank you.
banging on the back with the girls of two. And I was dancing all over the room. I thought you know the people were dancing like they were better. And the swinginest band they had ever had. And the swinginest song they could ever be. It's a night trip for Teddy G. Let me tell you that I never had it so good.
Number one on the chart, 2:45, by U.S. Bonds. Now, the problem was, it was a good promotional gimmick by U.S. Bonds. However, how did it feel turning on the radio and hearing DJs saying, there's a great group, the U.S. Bonds?
Well, yeah, they did that quite a bit. I don't know how they couldn't figure out.
They couldn't figure out it was just one singer.
It was just one.
But that's
guy,
partly so. Because of all the multi-tracking you did. I mean, it sounded like you could have been a group.
I think so. I think that had to be it. That we changed it. That we added my real name to the beginning.
But you wanted to keep the U.S.
Yeah, well, we, you know, that was our ticket to glory.
Absolutely.
You know, so we said, well, what do we do? Well, we just put your first name. It was Gary. U.S. Bond, and then everybody will know it's just one guy.
Okay.
Wrong. Gary and the U.S. Bond.
You changed it to Gary U.S. Bonds, and then the DJs were saying, here's Gary and the U.S. Bond.
So he added another guy to his group.
You can't win for losing.
I'm telling
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. But the first recording that you had, and was the follow-up to 2:45, as Gary U.S. Bonds, was School Is Out.
Yep.
And that, of course, struck a nerve with a lot of people, because, I mean, after all, kids are glad when school is out. Did you write that song?
I wrote that with Daddy G. Daddy G was a school teacher there, a high school teacher in Suffolk County, Virginia.
Okay.
And we were just sitting in our little local bar one day, as we normally did at the Blue Nile, and said, well, what are we going to do next? And he goes, I don't know. We started talking. Said, man, I'd be so glad to get rid of these stupid kids. I sure be glad when school is out. Said, okay, that's cool. Let's write about that.
So what? A two, a one, two, three.
Oh, no more books and burdens. Now I can stay out late with my burdens. I can do the things that I want to do. But all my exams are through. I can root for the Yankees from the bleachers. And don't have to worry about teachers. And I'm so glad that school is out.
Everybody gonna jump and run.
School is out. Gary, U.S. Bonds. I'm Ronnie Allen, so pleased to be talking to a man who is a veteran in the business, going to be celebrating his 50th year pretty soon. Was it you and Daddy G that came up with School is In?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he got tired of not making money, he had to get back to work.
The kids are glad when school is out. The teachers are glad when school is in.
Right.
So that's what it is. And this was the follow-up. It didn't do nearly as well.
Yeah, not as well.
Because the teachers didn't buy as many of your records as the kids did.
One, two, three, four. I'm so glad that school is in. Now I can see my whole classmates come in. I work and play the summer school, doing the things my mother told me to do. I watch the dishes and scrub the floor, and taught some baby how to count to four. I made the bed and cut the grass. I played the school in the inner land.
School is in. School is somewhere in the middle. We're going to be doing some twisting right now. Your next big hit record, and it was also from the same year, 1961, Dear Lady Twist. Did you write the song?
No, that's an old public domain song, actually. It's an old Caribbean song. We changed the words around and changed the beat around to make it ours.
Darling, may I have the pleasure of having this next visit with you? You don't know how to twist? Well, let me tell you.
Let's go.
Lady Twist. Got to number 9 on the chart, and I guess the hook line of that song is do the twist and you'll never grow old.
You'll never grow old.
Yeah. That's the thing about a lot of your songs, whether you wrote them or somebody else wrote them, there was like a hook line. New Orleans, of course, had the gimmick at the beginning, which was inspired by Cab Calloway. The memorable line in 2:45 to me was the night with Daddy G.
Oh, yeah.
School is out, of course, had your rooting for the Yankees from the bleachers. And this one, Never Growing Old, doing the twist, and you stayed in the twist vein for your next very successful recording, which was Twist Twist Senora, and this one has to be a public domain song, too. It was originally called Shake Shake Senora.
I believe it was, yeah.
No, I have a version of it by Lord Flea.
Shake, 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 Senora, shake your body dance. Shake, Senora, shake it all the time. Work, Senora, work your body dance. Work, work.
Hey, that was Lord Flea's take on that. Now we're going to hear Gary U.S. Bonds doing it as Twist Twist, Senora. Twist, twist, Senora. I am Ronnie Allen, and I'm so pleased to be walking down memory lane and just enjoying this so very much. And I guess one of the things we didn't mention is that while all of these records were on the chart, you were doing a lot of touring in various places, right, throughout the country?
Oh, yeah. We were everywhere.
Did you ever appear with Clay Cole?
Of course, yeah, we did Clay Cole a lot. I can't remember if there's anybody we didn't do.
Murray the K?
Of course.
Did you do the Caravan of Stars tours?
Oh, yeah.
You
I
did.
Was on the Bandstand.
And you did American Bandstand.
Yeah.
And how many times were you on American Bandstand?
I don't know. It was a lot. It seemed like I was on there every other week.
Like, when weren't you on American Bandstand? We're going to get to a record right now, but I really like this one. It was not a top 10 record, but it should have been, and it's called 7 Day Weekend. What can you tell me about that?
Well, that was a song that was given to me. It was in a movie called It's Trad Dad, Rock Around Rhythm. I believe it was an English movie, and it was a good song.
Out of the living on the shelf, until the weekend, right.
7-day weekend. Now think about it. If we all had a 7-day weekend, nobody would ever work.
Wouldn't that be great?
We'd all be out of work. We'll talk about that in a few moments. You really had a string of hits, 1960 through the end of 1962, and then the hits kind of stopped coming at that point. Did you continue to remain with Frank Guida at that time?
Oh, no, I got out of there while I was still kicking. No, I got away from there.
Did you switch to another record label at that point?
No, I didn't.
Did you decide to stop recording for a while and just tour? Or?
Well, yeah, I was contracted to him.
Oh.
And so I just decided, well, I didn't want to do it anymore. You know, I didn't like the circumstances.
But you still had the contract.
I still had the contract, so I just said, well, okay, I'll just wait it out.
How long did you have to wait it out? 18 years?
It was a long time, you know, but I'm that kind of a guy.
From 1963 until 1980, people did not see Gary U.S. Bonds on the record chart. However, you were working as a very active performer anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get to your comeback record, which was This Little Girl, and that has a story attached to it, The Boss has something to do with that one. Before we get to that, I'm going to play a recording that you co-wrote with a gentleman who is known professionally as Swamp Dog. His real name is Jerry Williams Jr., and the song is called She's All I Got.
Friend Don't Take Her, She's All I Got.
What is that, the full title? I mean, I've seen the title as She's All I Got. Is there a parenthesis part of it?
Don't well, take... it all depends on where you look it up at. But it started out as Friend Don't Take Her, She's All I Got. And then they broke it down to She's All I Got. But all I know is I got the check.
That's all you needed to get. Originally, it was an R&B song, and I believe it was Freddie North.
Freddie North recorded it.
He was on the R&B chart with it, and also the pop chart
as
well.
Yeah, it was number one R&B.
But I'm going to play the version of the song by Johnny Paycheck, a country singer. Did you ever envision that Johnny Paycheck would do your song?
Well, not Johnny Paycheck in particular, but I've been a country writer all my life. That's what I do. I love country. That's one of my favorite forms of music.
This was the biggest one that you had as a country writer.
The biggest one, yes.
Well, I said, when I want to live, she's everything to me in life that life can give. She's my water when I need a drink. She's the first thought in my mind each time I try to think. Let me tell you now, friend, don't take her, she's all I've got. Please don't take her love away from
that's really real. She is love. She's all the love I know. She could kiss the ground in the winter time and make a flower grow. Let me tell you now, friend, don't take her, she's all I've got. Please don't take her love away from me. I'm begging you, friend, don't take her, she's all I've got. She's everything in life I'm ever gonna need. You hear me talking now, friend, but don't take her, she's all I've got. I'm begging you, your friend, don't take her, she's all I've got. Yeah, I'm begging you, your friend, don't take her, she's all I've got. You hear me talking now.
And after Johnny did the song, you cashed a lot more paychecks, didn't you, Gary?
Yeah, we did. And then we just had it not too long ago, just a few years ago, Tracy Byrd did it and became number one country again.
I wasn't even aware of that. Talk about a great copyright. The story of Gary U.S. Bonds in terms of recordings did not end with the hits back in the early 60s. Because in 1981, after some people had been saying, whatever happened to Gary U.S. Bonds, all of a sudden, you come out with a record and it crashes into the top 100, and Bruce Springsteen had something to do with this one. How did this little girl come about?
I was working in Jersey at a little nightclub, which I was often doing, and he stopped by, him and a couple of his buddies, to check out the show. And I guess he enjoyed it. You know, one of the guys came up and said, I got this guy out here. He really loves what you're doing. He loves your music and everything. He'd like to know if he could come up and sing a number with you. I went, well, of course, go ahead. Bring him on up here. Give me a chance to go get a beer. So I said, ladies and gentlemen, we got a young man out here, you know. Let's give him a round of applause, get him up here. Let's have some fun, all right? His name is Bruce Springsteen. And the crowd went wild. And I'm standing up there, who is this guy? I don't know. He got up and we started singing. I mean, we were up there for at least an hour, just jamming.
Unbelievable.
And we became friends after that. We sat and had a couple of beers, and then we met again. He invited me to a couple of his shows that he was doing in Jersey, and then another one at Madison Square Garden. And I just come on up and we do quarter to three and a bunch of songs with him. And that's how we got into doing our first recording.
And he wrote a song for you, and that song was...
This Little Girl. He wrote it here at my house on my little piano here.
Here she comes. Yeah.
What label did that come out on?
That was on EMI.
EMI. So this was your comeback single.
Yep.
Got to number 11 on the chart. The year was 1981, and I understand it sold as many copies as many of your earlier hits.
Oh, yeah. It sold a lot. It's still selling.
We're going to have one more of your hit recordings, and then we're going to close the show with something that is very special to you. It's one that you did with Mr. Springsteen, the boss. Something about a dog and new tricks, but before we get to that, back in 1982, you had a recording called Out of Work.
Yeah.
Did you write that one?
No, that's Mr. Springsteen's song there. He wrote that, and to this day, I don't know how he got the inspiration to do it. How can you talk about being out of work?
When you're Bruce Springsteen, it's difficult.
Yeah.
Nobody could ever call you a one-hit wonder.
They
might be able to call you a 10 or 11-hit wonder.
Right.
Perhaps. You are still out there performing. Where can people see you these days?
I'm all over the place. The new album is going to be shipped out at the end of June. It's called Let Them Talk.
We're going to close now with a recording called Can't Teach an Old Dog New Tricks.
That's from the Back in 20 album.
When did that come out?
2005. Comeback Blues Album of the Year for me.
Who's on this particular track? Bruce Springsteen, I believe, is on this.
Springsteen is on there, and also Southside Johnny on harmonica, and my Roadhouse Rockers.
Gary, I thank you so very much for taking the time, and I want to wish you continued success. Do you have a website?
GaryUSBonds.com. That's a hard one, isn't it?
GaryUSBonds.com, and this is Can't Teach an Old Dog New Tricks.
Morning, baby. frightening stories you can't wait to tell. I got my own way of being who I wanna be. I can't live my life for no one else. I keep my mind wide open. What you gotta say? Lord, I ain't always right, but I know when you're wrong. Cause I've been doing it too doggone long. You can sing it if you wanna, but it's still my doggone song.
You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Can't teach an old dog new tricks.
And that's the show. Now a couple of bonus tracks. First, we have a song that many different recording artists have done. It's an old Cajun tune, and Gary does a great version of it. It's called Jolie Blonde.
Yeah.
finally, gonna go full circle. Gary's first recording was New Orleans, and we're gonna close with this bonus track called Take Me Back to New Orleans.